It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those of us who work in the sports media, our vacation is now over, effective today, because it is going to be wickedly busy between now and I don't know when, certainly into next spring, because already you can see we have All-Star break in baseball, we have the Major League Draft tonight, get on the list, we have the Olympics coming up, that starts in 10 days, camps are opening, one rookie camp is already open, the Baltimore Ravens. More camps will open, about a half a dozen will open on Tuesday. First full camp will open on Wednesday. That's the Houston Texans. We are 18 days away from the first preseason game of professional football. The Falcons' first preseason game is coming up on the 9th of August against the Miami Dolphins. We are under 6 weeks to college football. SEC Media Days are this week. I mean, it's just insane. In addition to everything else that we've been talking about here in town, about what's going on with the Hawks and whatnot. So, vacation's over. It's time to get down to business here. And with that in mind, we're starting to peek ahead to Falcons camp here. And Harper LaBelle, of course, is the co-host of the Wade Ford Tailgate Show with Joe Patrick and myself, a longtime football player in the NFL, former Falcon. And he joins us and discuss this and other things I got to chat with Harper about. What is up, my friend? How you doing?
How are you, John? Good afternoon.
What is shaking in the Harper LaBelle world?
Man, it's hot, isn't it? These are those days where you don't want to play baseball. You really don't want to go out to training camp. You know, everybody's out by the pool having a great time staying cooler indoors. And training camp for everybody is going to be going on in just a few days.
Yeah, well, already Baltimore's already opened up, and half a dozen more on Tuesday, and then the first full again, Houston, on Wednesday. So talk to me here about I ask a question, and I'd like to ask you just kind of broadly here. It was one we discussed with some of the fans on the show today. The biggest thing to watch for in camp / preseason, and there are four categories. If you want to go off the board, you can. Is the biggest thing, one, the new coaches and the new schemes? Is it two, the new quarterbacks and their impact on the team? Is it three, the new players, draft picks, and free agents? Or is it four, the holes that we think exist, especially on the defense, and if they show up, how to mend them?
Well, I'll answer by going yes to all of the above. Will I be watching those specifically? I had three in particular, and my first was kind of an A and B, where I want to see how the coaches teach. I want to see how they, because everybody goes in spring training, the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox and the Kansas City Royals all believe they can win the World Series. And a month later, we know the truth is that probably, you know, very, very few of those underachievers are going to get a chance to get into the playoffs and postseason. In a football perspective, same thing. You know, I think the Arizona Cardinals for a week or two and even the New England Patriots are going to say, we've got a chance. But, you know, the reality is a little bit different. You know, it's going to change after they play for a couple of games and the way injuries go. But I would honestly just, I want to see how Raheem Morris and his staff are able to make things better from where they were last year at the same time. You're going to have the same enthusiasm, but how are we going to distribute the ball to where we have all these guys on offense that we get them all included? And is my offensive line going to block as good as I have to have them in order to make this an accomplishable goal? Does that make sense the way I said that, John? I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't want to throw too much at you, but that's critical to me.
Well, I said in the last segment here that, because we were talking about, I was pegging off of what Landry Fields said about the Hawks and about the fact that, you know, sometimes you just have to listen to what, you know, they say and then figure out what they mean with what they say. And, you know, when Landry is asked directly about Trey, for example, and does not say, yes, he's definitively on the team, he's our guy, and he immediately mouths it and says, I don't know, maybe, you know, value him like we value right. DeJounte. You know, what they're telling you is they're shopping him. And that's for the general managers around the league and whatnot. That's for their to hear Landry say that, right? So when Raheem Morris, and I walked the, you know, fans through when we were all talking about Justin Fields and the Falcons really got mad, or not mad, but they were like, stop it, 92 in the game. Stop it, Fricky, about talking about Justin Fields. So Raheem had to come out and say, well, what we're looking for is an elite processor. And okay, that's Kirk Cousins. All right, fine. Noted, heard, gotcha, fine. It's not Justin Fields anymore. We understand. Because he couldn't tamper and all that kind of stuff. Okay, we gotcha. The other part of this is that when Raheem says, Harper, and this is what I wanted you to weigh in on. Raheem has said the word Super Bowl multiple times. You know, Mike's got to learn Kirk's job is to get us to a Super Bowl. And then he's used it again and again. That is not just for internal consumption in speaking it into existence inside his team. It is. You want the team to have that kind of mindset here. And you want to ask for the stars and the moon because, as you said, everybody thinks they're a champion. I think it's also meant to be a shout-out to the fans here in a way where he's saying, this is what I believe, that Raheem Morris is saying, look, I look at this roster as we go into camp, and I see the 2016 Falcons. I look at this roster, I see the Super Bowl champion LA Rams. This team is Super Bowl capable. We are not going to say, I'm not telling you, hey, listen, we'll be better this year. No, this team, if we do this right, if I do my job right, and Zach and Jimmy and Marquise and the players all do their jobs and we stay healthy, yes. Guys, this is a Super Bowl team.
Yeah, he's setting the blueprint in many different ways. Once in the office, in that building, and that means the upper management, that means with each and one of those players, the equipment managers, the trainers, there's going to be a different mindset in the way that we prepare and the culture that it's going to take in order to make that happen. For him to talk about it as excessively as he has and consistently has been very impressionable to me. I've talked to you before about this. It means a lot for me to hear this and it not just be a little bullet point that he mentions in a press conference to make it sound like it. I think he's going through step A to step Z, every one of them in between, that this is what it's going to take. And for him to have won it in L.A. as a defensive coordinator and go, our talent level here on this team is very similar. No, we don't have Aaron Donald, and we don't have Matthew Stafford, let's say, but we've got all the other pieces that are in place. And if that's all we're missing, I like my chances. So that's the thing about the coaching
staff
that I like.
But we do have Kirk Cousins. Yeah, we got Kirk Cousins and we got Grady Jarrett. And, oh, by the way, we have Bijan Robinson, too, which, you know, the Rams didn't have that kind of, you know, I mean, unless I'm wrong, I've said this before here, Harper, I think Bijan Robinson is second best running back in the NFL. Better than anybody not named McCaffrey. I think he's that good.
Yeah, and I think his ability to run in between the tackles may not be as good. We'll find out because we went with Tyler Algier. That's the thing that we had. More than one guy that could fulfill that role. And then Cordarrelle Patterson got 8 to 10 touches a game. So saving a fresh Bijan Robinson, who was still athletic enough and not beat up enough in week 12, 13, 14, I agree with your point that, yeah, he was still a fundamental part of a defensive coordinator's nightmare that they would have to figure out when they play the Falcons if they got him the ball enough times. That depends. Everybody's going to have a different number. I don't know what yours, John, is. Does he need 12 touches? Is it 15? Is it 18 or more? But he is somebody that is definitely a force that needs to be stopped by an opposing defensive coordinator. I agree.
So as we start to go into camp, one of the things is when you're putting in new coaches and new schemes, And it sounds like, you know, of course, we can't know on defense because really, Harper, as we all understand, you could say you're a 3-4 or a 4-3. All defenses are flex. It's down and distance. It's opponent. It's who's injured. They're all flex. They're all NASCAR. Everybody's doing line switches nowadays. But on offense, if we're going back to something, because I believe that Raheem is going to try to replicate what we had in 2016 under Kyle Shanahan with Zach Robinson. You've got a veteran quarterback. You've got big targets on the outs. You've got a great running game. You've got a veteran offensive line. And wouldn't Jake Matthews be the most interesting person to talk about with that? I think they're going to go to a similar blocking scheme, too, which is more of a zone blocking scheme. So if they do that, my question is, how fast is it? Do you need to? Because they did it in 2016 with a veteran quarterback. How fast is it? Does it happen with Kirk Cousins at quarterback when you're bringing in a new signal caller?
Yeah, that could be a week. It could be a whole year before everybody seems to be clicking and doing it the right way. It's hard when you're changing from whatever you did last year to something new. But is Caleb McGeary up for it? Is Jake Matthews up for it? I think Chris Lindstrom has proven that he's not only a pro bowler, but, you know, one of the best in the business at what he does. What about Dahlman? You know, how is he going to be able to do it? And then collectively, if they do a better job of protecting our quarterback than we've done in the last two or really 3 years, keeping him upright, it won't really matter as much because we're going to get completions that the Falcon fans have not seen in a long while. And that was one of my points, is that it's critical, not just the quarterback, but how do people working with the quarterback, who's going to protect him and who's going to get the ball down the field? All of those things come into play. And, you know, we're going to see a lot of Michael Penix in the first 3 weeks of the preseason. I believe that. And I think it will happen because we want Kurt to come back in a time frame to where we don't rush it. And he's ready to be 100% on the day we need him at 100%, not 2 weeks before that, so, or 3 weeks. But those are all keys. And one of the things that I want, and I'm probably going off target a little bit here with you, John, but one of the things that I want to see in training camp is how do the Falcons address 3rd-and-1? In my opinion, me, myself, and I, all three of us agree, that's been an issue for years. Years. How do we get 3rd-and-1 taken care of so we can keep the ball and not have to punt it back to our opponents? That to me will be a very, very important part of what Raheem and the offensive coordination and Cam Robinson, everybody's got something that they need to get better at, and I think that's one of the areas with the Falcons.
All right, Harper, is there something you want to ask me? Because I think you had indicated you wanted to ask me a question.
Yes, I have a training camp question for you, John, and I'm going to give you choices. Every team has a opening day when you report the camp test that you've got to do. And I'm going to give you 5 options, and you get to pick which one that you want to do, depending on how you feel. But the Dallas Cowboys, back when Tom Landry was the head coach, and he had 2 guys that were assistants with him, one named Mike Ditka, the other named Dan Reeves, and they took this system with them. For training camp, you have to sign a contract, and you have to pass this test in order to get a helmet and a uniform to go to practice. The Dallas Cowboys, you need to run 10 40-yard dashes. You have 30 seconds rest in between each one. And if you don't run within a 10% penalty of your fastest 40 time, you have to do the test all over again. Meaning, if you run a 5 flat, you get 10%, which is a half a second. If you run any 40 in over 5.49 seconds, you got to do the test over again the next day and you can't practice. Dallas Cowboys. The next is Kansas City. You had to run 1.5 miles in under 12 minutes. You had to bench press your body weight plus 50 pounds, and you had to double your body weight for a deadlift. So if you weighed 300 pounds, you had to do a 600-pound deadlift. Third, that would be Philadelphia. You had to run an 800 in under 2 minutes, and you had to do a bench press test. You had to max that out. The Atlanta Falcons. 5 gassers, which is the width of the field, not the length, the width. It's 160 feet from one sideline to the other. There and back, there and back. That's 1 gasser. You had to run 5 of those in under 36 seconds with 1 minute rest in between. And the last one was the Green Bay Packers. When I went there, we had to run a 300, which is goal line to 50, back to the goal line, back to the 50, and repeat that one more time. It's 300 yards. You had to run three of those in under 2 minutes, and then you had to run, I'm sorry, it was a minute 40, and then you had to do a bench press of 315. You had to max out with that, and then a deadlift test. Which of the five do you have to do before we go to the break?
Well, I mean, I know which one I'm not doing.
Which one's that?
I hate gassers with the passion of a fire of a thousand suns. I'll do anything with gassers.
So
no.
The Falcons and the Packers are both out. You're not going to do those.
Yeah. No gassers, no Oklahoma drill. I did the Oklahoma drill once and went, all right, never again. Okay, I got to take a break, and then you can tell me on the backside of the break. Harper LaBelle is joining us here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We'll also talk to him about that, and we'll talk to him about the start of the season, those first 5 weeks, and how incredibly difficult and critical they are for the Atlanta Falcons with all these new schemes and new players. What does it mean? That's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Just for Harper LaBelle. He's a Zeppelin guy. You're a big Zeppelin guy, right, Harper?
Okay. Not like Chuckery. Remember, he says this is the worst band ever assembled. I couldn't agree less. Ah, but okay.
Okay. Well, yeah, whatever.
Go to the source.
You were talking about these things that the players had to go through, because it was, you know, my football playing experience is far limited. I mean, it ended after my sophomore year in high school, because I got injured and then I got out of shape and I started playing golf. And I was a baseball guy anyway. But I did go through, as a sophomore going trying to make the varsity team, I went through gassers and I went through the Oklahoma drills and I went, that's not for me.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, no one likes them. No one, ever. But you got to get through it. But go ahead, John. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No. I just was, thinking that one of the things I thought was interesting, and I wonder if they do this nowadays, maybe they do, maybe they don't, is that I left for the summer to come back. It would have been my junior year, actually, after my sophomore year. And that's when it was the training camp my junior year. And when I left for the summer, they did, it was, this is 1977. They did like you would do with a combine. So we had to run a 10, a 40, a 100, a 1500. We had to do a long jump, a high jump. We had to do, curls and push-ups and sit-ups and it was a whole bunch of things, like 20 things, and you got your scores right on whatever you did, and then in the column next to it they put your targets, and you had to hit those targets when you came back for fall camp, and so you couldn't have target, you were going to have to work at it till you got to the target. You see what I'm saying? So if you were repping, at that time, 175 pounds, not 270, 225, but 175. If you did 8 reps at 175 on the bench, you'd have to do 12, or something like that. So the coach knew we'd spend all summer trying to get better in every single category, so we wouldn't have to redo it when we got into the fall camp. So it was pretty smart, I guess, in that regard.
Yeah. Well, you start with a baseline, and then afterwards they want to see what improvement that you make in the month or 3 months that you have until you go into training camp. Yeah, that hasn't changed much. Everyone has off-season conditioning that you got to get ready for. But, the Oklahoma drill, I always thought that duck walks were the stupidest thing you could ever do. I don't know what that did. And it still makes no sense
duck
to me. But
to
I did
people.
Those, I explained, did those in high school. Yeah.
I know what they are, but explain those to people.
You get down like you're a catcher in a catching position, and you have to walk like 10 or 15 yards. It's just some stupid little
conditioning. Kills your knees. Kills your knees.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I want to go to this as we go to camp here. One of the things that's true about this Falcons team, if they are going to achieve, and again, 6 points better per game last year. 6 points, okay? One score. 6 points better per game, that team goes from 7-10 to 12-5, okay? So that's kind of the baseline here of 18.9 points per game, 19 points a game to 25 points a game or higher than the Falcons are going to be. And I think maybe having to go to maybe even up to 27. So I'm looking at a 9 point per game kind of swing offensively, about 33% better than they were last year. And that's just cutting down on stupid turnovers, as you said, more effective in short yardage situations, more effective in the red zone, and just better explosive plays. I think that they could be demonstrably better on offense. So having said that, I think we could probably agree that there ought to be some serious upside on that side. What about the defensive side of the football, though? I mean, what Dean Pease and Ryan Nielsen were able to do in patching it together, they were pretty good defensively at times last year. How much pressure is on Jimmy Lake, and what do you expect from this defense here when you're asking a lot out of guys coming back? You're asking Zach Harrison to be better, Arnold Ebiketie to be better, Troy Anderson to be healthy. You're asking for Ruka Roro and Braylon Trice and Brandon Dorlis to be immediate impact players. You're asking for a big step up from Clark Phillips and from DeMarco Helms. You're asking for a lot from a lot of guys, aren't you?
Yeah, I would think that the pressure on the entirety of the defensive side of the ball to keep the amount of points that they give up down. You were with Hugh Douglas for all those years, and Hugh used to always give the Jimmy Johnson analogy, keep it under 17, guys, and we got a chance to win. And it was true. I think that's in any locker room in the league. If you can do something like that, and the Falcons have not done that. So you're asking the existing players from last year to do better than what they did previously, and then you're going to have the guys that you mentioned, Arohoro. You've got Braylon Trice. You know, what was one of our top pressing needs was to get an edge rusher, and we got one in the third round. And think of the pressure that young man is going to have to go through to get more than 8, maybe 12 sacks, 15 in a league he's never played in. A lot of pressure there. Obviously, our ability to keep people, from getting the first down, the back end, the back seven in the secondary, linebackers, cornerbacks, safeties, yes, pressure all the way around to get better, especially if you're going to couple it with the Super Bowl analogy that we were talking about in the first segment. It's got to get better, and you need to see it from day one.
And to start, you know, with new coaches, new schemes, new players, new quarterbacks, new cadences, all of these things in a year where you have high hopes, and you look at the schedule, and it is daunting. And I bring this up because you've got to do and make noise against a daunting schedule with all that newness, because 4 of the first 5 games are at home, and 2 of them are against the 2 biggest threats to you in the division, and you have to win home games against Tampa and New Orleans in division. And you open against no less than Mike Tomlin and the Steelers in a game that's probably a toss-up, because we don't know what Arthur Smith's going to do on offense there. And then Russ Wilson, Justin Fields, how's that going to kind of play out in camp? Then you have to go on the road to face Philadelphia in a primetime game, come home and face Kansas City in a primetime game. Then you face the Swampers. Then you quick turn to another primetime game against Tampa. So 3 of the first 5 are in prime time. All 5 are critical. 3 are in conference, and 4 of the 5 are at home, but they're against really tough teams. You got to find a way to go 3-2 and nothing less, right?
Pretty much, yeah. When you think about last year and our conversations that we would have on the Wade Ford show about, okay, we're going against Arizona, we should win this game. How do you feel about Tennessee? Well, we should win this game. How do you feel about the Vikings? They don't even have a quarterback that was on the roster on Wednesday's practice. That should be a game that we should win, right? And it's even more daunting when you don't beat the teams that you should, and then you go against some of the better teams that are in the league. As you mentioned, when we start against Pittsburgh, then Philly, you got Kansas City, et cetera, et cetera. So you're again, asking the coaching staff to come up with a new way of thinking that avoids being in a panic over all these situations and being able to say, we can handle this. We can take the Steelers, and we're going to, and this is how we're going to do it, and get the guys to believe it and to actually act upon it and do it. Not an easy task, but if we go 3-2, 4-1, what if we're 5-0 at that point? Oh, I can hear people right now screaming, they'll never be 5-0. Well, you know what? There's a different group of guys, and they're probably setting their tasks right now on getting to that level, as opposposed to just squeaking out a 2-3 in your first 5. So a lot of things need to happen, but first and foremost is get into camp, make sure everybody's healthy and safe, get them all on the same page, and start getting them to do things better than they've done it before.
And then here's another thing about the schedule you may not realize. I'm not talking to you, Harper. I'm talking to everybody on the audience. In the first 10 games, in the first 10 weeks, the first 10 games, five of those 10 games are against your division, okay? Five of those 10, including both games against the Swampers and both games against Tampa in the first 10 weeks. So you're going to have to – you could win the division literally in terms of just the division standings within the teams within the division. I'm not talking about overall. But I'm talking about in the first 10 weeks or lose it in the first 10 weeks. And the problem with that is if you lose it, you can't make it up. You'll lose all the head-to-heads. This schedule really is daunting in that regard. So he's walking into a firestorm of a schedule in terms of the way it kind of shapes out. And then the back end of the schedule, you're away, 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 away. And even though the schedule, you know, at least from a opponent's standpoint, lightens up, it's still, wow, it's really daunting. So having said that, as you look at camp here, you mentioned, you know, getting Kirk Cousins healthy. Hey, Harper, I'm going to give you some rapid-fire questions. You ready?
I'm ready.
Do we see Kirk Cousins at all in any of the three preseason games?
Yes. I think the third one he'll play at least a quarter, maybe a half. Maybe not the first two. It depends on how he feels and how much he fights for the time. I think he may not fight for it as much in week one, but I think he'll fight to say, hey, you need to get me out there. I need to work with these guys, and it needs to be live. Maybe not in Miami as much as that noon game against Baltimore in week two of the preseason.
Right. They're at Miami, they're at Baltimore, and then they're home against Jacksonville in the final game. And interestingly enough, I think Baltimore is the best team in the NFL. And I think, you know, Miami is certainly maybe the favorites in the AFC East, and Jacksonville maybe the favorites in the AFC South. So, again, they're preseason games, but those are three really good teams. So the good news is you go into this daunting schedule, and this is what I'm about to make a point here, is you're having, you know, these practices with the Dolphins, and you're facing three really good teams in Miami, Baltimore, and Jacksonville, three playoff teams. So you will, to some degree, be battle-tested as long as you can get the scheme and everybody on the same page in that preseason to be able to hit the ground running against the schedule that you face. Michael Penix, do you think there's a possibility that he plays so well, and I know it's preseason, that he plays so well, that we're sitting around here in the week before the Pittsburgh game, and I'm not saying that there's a quarterback controversy, but we have fans calling the station and talking to us saying we have to play Penix now.
I think that's going to happen regardless, the way some fans are, John. I agree that might happen. I sure hope that he plays that well. I'm not going to, you know, he played for a national championship. I have no problem with his talent, but I'm thinking this is a different level. And what if he doesn't play that well to where we're going, oh, my goodness gracious, why did we even select this guy? You know, I hope we don't have that either. But in all honesty, I just want him to be able to run a few of the more complicated plays and do so in a manner where he reads the blitz. He's able to pick it up, even if he doesn't get the first down, but he just makes the right read. Let's go through step A before we put him in a playoff game, you know, or have him be the starter against Pittsburgh.
All right, two names on offense, two names on defense that are new. Who are fans going to fall in love with more during the course of the season on offense, Rondale Moore or Darnell Mooney?
Mooney, I think he'll make some big plays on the outside. Because Drake doesn't remind me of the guy that's going to go deep. You know, he's more of the Roddy guy. I'm going to get the third down completion, and I'm going to break a couple tackles. You put the ball in Drake's hands and give him some room to run, I like that. But we haven't seen much of that in the last 2 years. I think that'll be different. But the guy that go over the top, I think Moore will be that guy. You know, third and three, and we're gonna go with a post route or a go route. We're going to hit him. And we're going to gain 45 yards. You know, those are the types of play that I think. And he could be incredibly valuable in that situation. How about
my
you? What do you think?
Defensive lineman take. Yeah, no, I love Rondale Moore from his days at Purdue, but that's what I remember him just lighting my team up. So I hope so. I mean, I have to see it. That's why I was leaning on you. That's why I was asking you to answer the question. So, again, I'm going to ask you to answer this question. Is my impression that Ruggiero is going to be as an interior defensive lineman. A clogger, a stuffer, yes, he's going to get some pressure, but his job is to occupy, you know, two gaps on either side of the center. That's his job, which doesn't necessarily lead to stats. So from he needs to be good, it just doesn't necessarily automatically lead to stats. So with the two stat guys that they drafted here, Brandon Dorlus, the defensive tackle out of Oregon, who they can bounce outside, and Braylon Trice, the defensive end from Washington, which of those two do you think will have a bigger impact on this team this year?
Well, I don't think the draft selection, meaning Rook is being the number one, will automatically place it. Look, if David Onyemata is healthy and Grady, I don't think either one of them see the field all that much. They'll come in situations, but they'll be rotated in. So my deep hope is that they watch from the sideline, they learn everything they need to, and they come in on third and second when Grady's tired or when the same with David. Because if those guys come back. But I love the fact that we're so thick now in a defensive line that had been thin for the last 2 years with depth, with speed, with guys that are big, and they can move. So it's not a Will Warfolk. Remember with him with the Patriots, you know, 365-pound body that was just there to stand in between the center and the two guards. These guys can move. And that's the thing I like about them is you can put them in different situations. You can put them inside or outside, and we're going to see a little bit of that in the preseason. Not much, but once the regular season kicks in, I think these guys and their talent is going to be amazing. But I'm going to go with Rook for right now of the two choices just because he's going to surprise me with everything he does. I didn't know anything about him prior to the draft. Didn't know anything. And now I'm learning, and I'm going, okay, you made a decision. Let's see what he can do, and I'm looking forward to seeing all that.
As always, Harper, thanks for taking some time here on a Sunday. Stay cool, my friend, and I'm looking forward to you and Joe and I and getting together on that opening game and start to talk about a little wait for it action in the Falcons. And you and I will be talking between now and then as we get through camp. Thanks much, Bob.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thanks. Have a great day yourself, John. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Alrighty. Harper LaBelle joining us. Quick break, top of the hour. It is Chris Goforth on Sports Radio 92 on the game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Well, it is an intriguing time in Atlanta sports right now, because all four of the major Atlanta sports teams are probably in the business of making moves, personnel moves. Certainly the Falcons are, because they're about to open training camp in 10 days, and that'll mean cuts and additions here and there. I think it's mostly going to be, you know, kind of depth positions, though. Could they make a move for a starting cornerback that's out there in free agency, or starting safety to kind of run alongside either A.J. Terrell or Jesse Bates? Sure. Would we be happy about that? I think so. Again, I can't tell you what they're looking at and what they're thinking about the growth of certain players, because it's not zero sum. You have to understand, and I think you do, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, that when it comes to players like Zach Harrison and Arnold Ebiketie, when it comes to players like Clark Phillips and DeMarco Helms, it's not always zero sum. In other words, they're not necessarily automatically going to be the same player they were last year. So much so that some of the Falcons coaches are sort of apologizing to Richie Grant about what they saw in film and what they actually saw when they met him in person. So they may be comfortable with where they're at in those positions. You may not be, but they may be. And it's up to them to make sure, because, again, we talked about having to hit the right. You're facing Russell Wilson or Justin Fields, but Russell Wilson, and you got Jalen Hurts. Then you got no less than the best quarterback in the game in Patrick Mahomes. Then you've got those two critical games that are coming up against Baker Mayfield and Derek Carr. So, I mean, you got Mike Evans, you got Chris Godwin, you've got all these superstar wide receivers that are out there. Lord knows Kansas City's wide receiver core. They're loaded. I mean, so it's going to be a test, however you slice it, it's going to be a real test for this team. And the way you help your defense on this team, of course, is to score points, and this offense is designed to do that. So we'll see. So you got the Falcons that are going to have to make some personnel moves, because obviously they're going to make cuts. We all understand that the Braves, playing now their last game before the All-Star break, are going to have to make moves by the trade deadline. I think all of us are kind of a consensus opinion that the Braves need to go get an outfielder. We'll see if that's what Alex Anthopoulos thinks. He's the man. He's the magic man. If that's what he decides to do or doesn't decide to do. Again, this is going to be up to him to make the moves that he thinks are necessary. And it's hard to argue with his track record of success as a general manager, especially at the trade deadline, where he's been better than any general manager maybe in the history of baseball. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Atlanta United, rock bottom. Rock bottom last night. Total rock bottom. And no goals, no shots on goal, no Yakimakis, no Almada, no Miles Robinson, no Pineda. This franchise, you want to talk about hard reset? This is as hard reset as you could possibly imagine. And Arthur Blank is going to have very tough meetings with Garth Lagerwey here at the end of the year, because you've got to reset the, not just the coaching of the franchise, but probably the entire direction of the franchise. And when I say the entire direction, I have mentioned many times that like LA Galaxy, like Inter Miami, like DC United, like other teams that have gone out and gotten a Rooney or a Messi or a Beckham, maybe it's high time that Atlanta United goes gets a center post guy and does whatever it takes to get that center post guy who wants to end his career in America in order to have him affect and make those guys around him better. And there's no reason, if those teams can go get the Beckhams and the Rooneys and the Messis and the Suarezes, that you can't either. There's no reason you can't. So maybe you do. And that would be kind of a reset from what they've been trying to do, which is to go get young, up-and-coming Latin players out of places like River Plate and whatnot in Argentina and develop them and then sell them and turn into some kind of like, you know, Kentucky basketball one-and-done thing here where we develop players and let them go on. And maybe that's something we got to get rid of. And maybe you need to get a more veteran team in here and a veteran coach who wants to play that kind of football. I don't know. Whatever they do, it'll be interesting to see what they do. And that, of course, takes us to the Hawks and whatever is going to happen here. So I got a question to Eric Slaughter about the Hawks. Eric, do you actually think the Hawks are actually going to trade Trey?
Not in the offseason, I don't know. I think they'll take some maybe trade deadline calls, but I think in October when we have opening night, he's on the floor.
Yeah, I of course that's my preference, and if that's the case, then why wouldn't you just say that? I'm still befuddled as to why you wouldn't say that. I think you might be right. I think only because they can't get what they want for him.
Well, that is part of it, but I think the bottom line is this. I think Landry Fields had a young GM learning moment. He's a young GM, wasn't a assistant GM for very long before he got the head seat. He hasn't really had a chance to say, these are the things I should say in an interview, and these are the things I shouldn't. I think that when he said that, he probably immediately regretted it, maybe that evening or the next day. He's like, man,
then where's the clarification?
But don't do that, because then you kind of admit to the world, oh, we effed up, we messed up. Just let it ride out.
He doesn't have to do it. Somebody else can do it.
Well, it might still come then.
Well, it's been 5 days.
I don't know. I just think he made a rookie GM mistake.
If he makes a rookie GM mistake, and everybody is aware that we're talking about it, and the internet's buzzing about it, and we're talking about it, everybody, it's not like it's a secret. All the clarification has to come is Quinn Snyder just has to say, Hey, listen, as we look forward, and he could do it softly too. Quinn say, you know, I'm really liking what I'm seeing at the summer league. I'm excited about what Zach and Jalen are doing, and it's too bad that Kobe got his shoulder dinged up. Hopefully he'll be ready for camp, and we're excited to see how this all kind of fits with Trey this year. And that's all he has to say. That's it. He doesn't have to come out and say, Trey Young is definitely on the team. He just has to say, I'm excited about how all this fits with Trey. And then it's over, right? Boom. Done. I just don't understand what's going on. I just really think it's interesting. And again, I'm not opposed to a hard reset if that's what you want to do. The only thing I've ever asked, and the hardest thing for some sports teams to do is be honest with their fans. And I've wanted to, you know, I always thought, you know, if I could own any team, this Eric, if you could own any sports team in a team in any league, what would you own?
Manchester United. I want the money.
No, not a team. You'd be owed a soccer team?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So pose the question one more time.
If you could own a team in any sport, what sport would you own a team in?
Oh, in any sport? No, yeah, it would be football. Absolutely.
NFL?
Yes, absolutely. NFL football.
Okay. Yeah.
King of the Hill? Okay. Biggest guys on the block?
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, if I could own a team, I'd own a hockey team, NHL.
Yes,
I love hockey.
Okay, tell me why. Yeah.
I miss it.
Okay.
But I would buy a hockey team, and unlike Calgary, I wouldn't steal the nickname. I would do what the Baltimore Ravens did. I would buy a hockey team, and I would say, whatever your nickname is, your uniform, your history, it all stays with you. Because the team that I'm bringing in here, if it's not an expansion franchise, I'm going to get rid – I'll tell my general manager, get rid of every player. Get rid of everybody. And I would tell my fans, look, we are starting a franchise from scratch. We're going to have a new nickname, new uniforms, new players, new coaches. We're just going to start over from scratch, and we're going to build our own thing here.
Okay, now.
And it's going to be rough for the first couple, 3 years because we're going to be young, and we're not going to be all that great. But just kind of go with the flow because my intention is to do nothing short of bring multiple Stanley Cups here.
Okay, where would you, this new franchise, in the current state of the National Hockey League, what city would you put it in?
Here.
Okay. There you go. I thought you were saying that. No, I mean, that's great.
And furthermore, I would use the Atlanta Flames old, I would go back in history and grab the Flames old jerseys, and I'd dare the Calgary Flames to sue me.
I'll see you in court, and do you want to pay the legal fees to deal with it? Okay. You know, I was there. I lived in Baltimore when the whole Ravens was established, and not only did the city not want to be called the Browns, you know, of course, the city of Cleveland was like, look, we want to keep our tradition and all that stuff. We was like, you can have it. We don't want that ugly color coming to our town. So we were happy to get purple and black and call them the Ravens.
Right. And besides Edgar Allan Poe, you know,
yeah,
died in a gutter in Baltimore.
You know, and they were like, you can keep your record book. We don't want any of the records. We don't want any of that stuff.
I wonder how many fans know that the team is named after the poem. Nevermore.
Quote the Raven.
After the Raven.
Quote the Raven, yes. Everybody Quote in that Raven city does. Nevermore. Everybody in the 410 does, John.
Who is it named after? The Browns are named after Paul Brown. The Ravens are named after Edgar Allan Poe. Really? Yeah. All right. My thanks to all of you that called in. My thanks certainly to Harper LaBelle and, of course, Eric Slaughter. Stand by. I'll be back 7 to 10 tomorrow night, Tuesday night, with you on 99 The Game tonight. Let's see what today brings and maybe tomorrow as well. Stand by for Chris Goforth as we continue covering all the breaking news out of Atlanta. And who knows if there isn't going to be more breaking news today because things is fluid, right? Right here on your home of the Hawks, United, and, of course, the Falcons, Sports Radio 99 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.